Artificial intelligence, or AI, has been in development since the 1950s. With the availability of big data and increased computing power, the AI market has grown substantially over the last decade and is expected to grow 20% annually over the next few years. Artificial intelligence is said to be the biggest disruptor of all times. At the American Planning Association, we want to find out how AI will impact the planning profession. What do planners need to know about AI? How can they prepare for what's to come? And most importantly, how can planners participate in the discussions around the development of AI, making sure it will be deployed in equitable and inclusive ways? I am Petra Hurtado, your host of this episode of the APA podcast and the research director at APA. To answer some of these questions, I will be talking with Neda Mahdi, City Infrastructure Analytics Director of the Network Dynamics Lab at the Georgia Institute of Technology, and Tom Sanchez, Professor of Urban Affairs and Planning at Virginia Tech. This podcast was produced in partnership with the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. Welcome, Neda and Tom. Thank you both so much for joining me for this podcast. Neda, I'd like to start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about your work as the City Infrastructure Analytics Director at Georgia Tech, and how did you get involved in the topic of artificial intelligence, and what's your connection to planning?
So my work at Georgia Tech is right now mostly focused on research and a little bit of teaching. I direct most of the research that involves urban analytics, and most of the methods that we use are computational and AI methods. So the course that we developed with my colleague here a few years ago, it's called Smart Sustainable Cities, and we have incorporated a little bit of AI and machine learning methods in that course that is a combination of engineering perspectives, and we have students from urban planning and architecture taking this course with us. And your other question, that how did I start with AI, goes back to during my PhD studies. Well, it's typical to use AI methods and computational science and engineering methods in our research. So at that time, AI was one of the very popular topics. New, you know, AI is not by nature new. It goes back to 1950s, but there was a paradigm shift sort of in terms of how we approached AI, because suddenly we had loads of data available for us. So I was doing those research methods back then, and then also in the research lab that I was working, I was also working with virtual reality applications. And in our field, we specifically in that research line, we were building models, like building information models in the virtual reality environment, and we were bringing students and collaborations into the virtual space. And creating these experiences for students, especially to go in there, go be an avatar, be in the virtual space, and build these models and design them together. But then I had this AI approaches on the other side that I was always fascinated to incorporate into this virtual reality. And of course, we could expand a building into a neighborhood, a city, and go on and make it bigger and bigger, hopefully, in the future. But so that was really the spark of how I was interested in working with AI methods and smart cities, the popular term that is used for using technology and data and sensors in cities. So yeah, that sparked the idea of smart cities, and then I would talk about my research in digital twins a little bit later, maybe.
Very interesting. Thank you, Neda. Tom, you are a professor of urban affairs and planning at Virginia Tech, and you teach about topics such as the future of cities or also planning methods and technologies with a very strong technology focus. Can you tell us a little bit about the classes you teach at Virginia Tech and your areas of research? And also, what spurred your interest into technological innovation in the context of planning and cities and specifically AI?
Yeah, thank you. I teach the course in Future of Cities, also another course, Technology, Policy, and Society, and then two of our methods courses, which are really kind of intro and intermediate level quantitative methods. The Future of Cities course, we focus kind of a larger or broader focus on that, where we look at economy, technology, environment, society, and, you know, it's really speculative and trying to push students to think about, you know, in the longer term, you know, what do we see these trends look like? And what does this mean for, you know, 50 or 100 years from, you know, from now, not just the 5 or 10 year frame that we're typically working with plans. And so it's really to be creative, think about the combination of trends that we're witnessing. And, you know, as usual with planners, we're thinking about people being the, you know, the focus of this. So not only how are people influencing the system, but then how are these systems affecting people, particularly as we think about the form of the city. Some of my recent research has been around looking at scholarly practices of urban planning faculty and also the use of social media, particularly Twitter. And so my interests there are really about a couple of questions. One is, what do planners do? What are they talking about? And talking about in terms of their scholarship and also in terms of social media platforms, which obviously is a different kind of conversation. But I think this comes back to my interest in planners generating information and exchanging that information, which is, you know, when we think about it, that's a lot of what we do in thinking about urban systems and working with the community and working with other experts, working with other disciplines. And so that flow of information is really interesting to me. And my interest in technology started during graduate school, early on, working with Steve French at Cal Poly, and these were in the early spreadsheet days, which sounds kind of funny and prehistoric now. But, you know, when we think about spreadsheets, I mean, that's the basic kind of, you know, database that we use and probably the predominant analytical tool that planners are using. We're hoping to change that, but that got me interested in it, as well as GIS and working with that at Georgia Tech with Bill Drummond. And again, it came back to that idea of being able to use data, being able to use evidence, being able to use that in an analytical way to support plans and to support decision making, and I've always been interested in the impacts of this use of information tools on planning organizations as well. And so, my master's thesis at the time was looking at innovation, diffusion, and adoption, basically computers, of planning organizations in California. And so at that time, I think it was only about half of planning departments were using computers, and several of them were hoping to at some point. So obviously, you know, times have changed, and that as an innovation, that has been one of kind of the interesting moments for planning and planning analysis.
That's great. And I actually read your master thesis. And what I found really interesting was that survey that you did where you asked people in the 80s how much they think computers would change the work of planners. And it seemed like the majority thought that computers will have no effect on what planners do. And I feel like we're in a similar conversation right now with AI, where a lot of people think, oh, I have nothing to do with AI. I will never use it. And in the end, we're all already using it. Thank you, Tom. That was really interesting. So today, as I already mentioned, we will be talking about what is said to be the biggest disruptor of all times, and that is artificial intelligence. Now, keeping in mind that most people in our audience are planners, how would you explain AI to someone who is not necessarily dealing with this topic in their daily work? And maybe can you share also some examples of where AI is already used today. Neda, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think the most fascinating part of AI to me is the fact that we make the machine learn like humans learn. So this whole learning process is what makes it different from what it used to be. So the birth of AI in the 1950s was on the basis of how can we make IT match the human capabilities. And at the time, it was based on logic and computer programs. And this method dominated AI for decades. But more recently, when we have now access to millions and millions of data points through sensors and data collection technologies, so the learning from direct experience has shifted the perspective. So this video a few years ago from Google DeepMind that was viewed by millions of people was very interesting to me, when there's a humanoid and they have built this deep learning algorithm to make the humanoid walk, run, jump, and eventually climb just based on experience. There's no pre-definition of any of these given to the humanoid, so it's all based on repetition and repetitive and routine experiences. So that's very fascinating to me, and I think that applies by extension into multiple areas. It's like learning to win a game, like a chess, or learning to diagnose in medicine based on looking at millions and millions of images for example, diagnosing skin cancer, or learning patterns from satellite imagery to forecast weather, and bringing this process closer and closer to real time is the really game changer for many disciplines, where in the past it would take many hours for humans or computers to perform this process, and this automation has been revolutionary.
So learning by example. Tom, anything to add there?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, and Neda alluded to this, is, you know, we use the term artificial intelligence, but actually that's kind of an umbrella for a bunch of different techniques that we're using, including machine learning and natural language processing, speech recognition, machine vision, robotics, and, you know, all of these things. The key thing, though, is, like Neda mentioned, is, you know, that learning capability. I think, you know, in planning, we're used to doing an analysis process that may not necessarily have that feedback, you know, in building the knowledge for the next time, you know, we apply that analysis, you know, in a similar set of circumstances. And I think with AI too, a lot of people, well, not only is there the conception of, you know, the black box, but also that it's all about automation. And I think a lot of the techniques that we're using, or that we're interested in using, really aren't about automating. I think it's about more efficient use of data, and perhaps more data, and that knowledge building, that learning over time. And so I think about, okay, what would the ideal AI system be for a planner? It would be, you know, me as a planner looking at a problem and really being able to draw on the knowledge and the experience of all planners, you know, so over time, so, you know, historically, as well as, you know, geographically and across disciplines, and really get that, you know, get as much information as I can in order to, you know, make that recommendation or make that decision or include that in the analysis. And I think this goes to a lot of knowledge management within an organization, that hopefully when a person retires or moves along, they're not taking all of their knowledge and experience with them. And so I'm hoping that within the context of AI, you know, we can capture that more efficiently and use that, you know, use that information more broadly and efficiently.
Very good point. And you kind of also already answered my next question, which was really, why should planners care about AI? And obviously, it has a lot to do with data and how to use it and how to process it. But why is it important for planners to learn about AI now that a lot of these things are still in development and there's not a ton of AI application for planning tools out there yet? Some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we forget that there are a lot of examples around us of AI in our everyday life. And so, you know, back to this idea of AI as the black box, and, you know, we're just going to put some things in and something else is going to come out magically. But, you know, we've got some common uses of AI. You know, when we think about spam detection for our email, we don't even think about that. We see a bunch of emails in our, you know, in our spam bucket. You know, how did they get there? Well, there was a system behind that were looking for patterns, looking for certain characteristics of emails that were, you know, that were spam. And that learns over time. Fraudulent credit card usage, you know, we'll get those alerts. Well, where did those come from? Well, the bank is looking for patterns, you know, geographically or, you know, sizes of transactions or types of transactions. And again, kind of, you know, learning over time. And recommender systems that we use every day for things to buy, you know, Amazon, you know, doesn't randomly, although it does seem randomly sometimes, you know, suggest things for us to buy or music to listen to. And so, and I don't think we don't tend to worry about those so much, like, well, where did these systems get this information about me? Oh, so they must know where I am. Oh, they know what I like. They know what I'm buying. We kind of accept it and see it as a convenience. And so I don't, you know, so this idea of, you know, AI as some kind of malevolent sort of, you know, force, I don't think that that's, you know, what we're talking about here.
Very true. And then, like, even if you navigate through your city with, be it Waze or Google Maps or whatever apps are out there, if there's an accident somewhere, AI is the one who's telling you how to reroute and eventually get to your destination. So we're really all using it in our daily lives. Neda, you are not a planner. What would you tell a planner on why they should care about AI? And what are some of the thoughts you have on why now? Why should planners look into this topic now?
Yeah, I think that's very interesting because In engineering, we sort of traditionally focus less on societal perspectives and social perspectives, such as quality of life, economics, social equity, these topics that are on the forefront of planners' job. But more and more, our discipline is going to merge with these other disciplines because it's a necessity for the society. Not too long ago, it was often said that, oh, computer vision is a discipline that cannot compete with visual abilities of not even a one-year-old. But we will see today that this is no longer the case. And then object recognition is so advanced, such as it can detect objects as well as an adult. And not only that, but self-driving cars have that line of research has advanced so much that Today, cars can learn from experience and drive better than a teenager, I would say, at least. But just like, you know, this is actually a good example. Just like the self-driving cars have levels, there are six levels for an automated car. And level zero is the human will fully drive. And level five, so it starts from zero to five. And level five is the car will fully drive. And the human will just act as a passenger. But we're not at level five yet. I think the technology has advanced up to level three or so. But I think I would like to think of planning just the same way. Yes, we never, well, never say never, but it's really hard to imagine that, you know, these social aspects can be automated in some way in the future, because as soon as we deal with human behavior, it's really hard to predict. It's a huge uncertainty, and it's very complicated to model. But that shouldn't stop us from advancing research in this direction. Yes, we have problems of today that planners need to attend to, but also we have to look forward into the future and maybe look at it like the self-driving car levels. Let's have an assisted AI for now and try and evolve with it and see how we can oversee, like humans can oversee these technologies and take advantage of their capabilities.
I like that idea. So at APA, we have been looking at AI really from two lenses. The first lens is AI and its impacts on communities that we make plans for. And the second lens is AI and its impacts on the planning profession itself. So processes we use, the tools, as well as skills planners need to be able to do their work. Let's maybe start with the first lens, the impacts that can be positive or negative impacts on cities and communities, and also what we can expect for the future. Maybe let's start with you, Netta, because obviously you're dealing a lot with urban infrastructure, and you already mentioned autonomous vehicles as an example, but do you have any other examples in that area?
Yeah, I can mention a range of positive maybe, but then we'll go to the negative next. So in terms of infrastructure specifically, AI has helped serve communities a lot. You mentioned the transportation infrastructure and the whole improving traffic congestion is all enabled with AI technology these days. I would say where the urgency is a factor in terms of, for example, disaster response, when a tornado or a hurricane hits, being able to rapidly provide actionable insight to first responders, which is the topic of many of our research projects in our lab, I think it's very critical. And AI automations that are enabled with AI is very helpful, because no human can process that kind of information that fast and come up with a response or plan of action. But again, we still need human insight in all of these. We're not there yet, but I think it's been a huge improvement compared to what we were able to do in the past. But also on the negative side, there's always ethical issues, and being able to serve communities equitably, which is luckily an active line of research, and hopefully we will see progress in that in the future.
Tom, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I like to think of, like I mentioned before, I like to think of planning being, you know, planners being in the knowledge business. I mean, we use a lot of information in putting, you know, future plans for resource use and improving quality of life. Lots of, you know, when we think about, you know, environmental plans, transportation plans, housing plans, other, you know, other kinds of services together. I mean, in integrating those, it's a lot of information. Then also when we're including in that community involvement, you know, the community input layer and other work by experts. I think the role of planners in this particularly with the application of AI, this is really an important time, and I think a real important reason for planners to understand AI is so they can be part of that building process of these systems. And so planners tend to have their focus on social and kind of ethical decision-making. So we need to be at the table. We need to be part of that process when we're working with Netta and the other engineers. So from our perspective, we can highlight or point out those points in the process where, hey, this is a possibility for bias, or this is when bias has actually occurred in the past as part of the plan making. So it's almost as we build some of these in different AI systems, you know, we can almost deconstruct those looking back and say, you know, what are the points in those processes that need to be improved or need to be approached, you know, differently. And so that we can avoid some of those past mistakes and poor decisions that were made.
So it's really about emphasizing the human factor of planning when we're talking about AI and planning. That's a good transition to the second lens, which is the impact on the planning profession per se and the processes and methodologies we use, the skills we need. And I've been following a lot in the media, you know, conversations about workforce displacement also related to AI. And it's kind of interesting when we look back in history. History has really shown that technology and technological progress have almost always created more and better paid jobs than the jobs it replaced. And it's really not necessarily the jobs that are being replaced, but really the tasks. And so coming back to the conversation we just had about creating equitable outcomes as the task of the planner here, what can we say about, planning and AI and how it changes what we do, and how can we emphasize this human factor of planning there while just, you know, changing maybe the task, but not necessarily replacing or displacing the jobs?
Because, you know, the way I see it, because so much of planning is a social and political process, you know, we as planners are putting together evidence and intelligence for plan making, but we're not making the decisions. We're informing the decisions. And so I can't imagine, and I say this today, but we'll look back several years from now, but I just can't imagine that human kind of social as well as that political element of the decision making ever going away. I mean, it's just so complicated. Again, I say that today, but the role of planners in examining, you know, ethical processes, and I think APA and AICP show what a priority, you know, ethics are to planning. And so I think this is even an opportunity to redouble that commitment, given that we may be using new systems, we may be using additional information. And if we're talking about things like big data, I think the planner will be there to make sure that we're protecting confidentiality and privacy in those cases where we're using data, say at the individual level or household level, or even, you know, or even a neighborhood. We want to make sure that those data are used properly and ethically. And also we want to make sure that the kind of the aggregation of those data don't end up being kind of the equivalent of profiling, as we've seen in the past with redlining. Redlining was basically profiling at the neighborhood level. And so hopefully we're gonna, you know, learn from those actions and mistakes in the past as we look toward building some of these newer systems that are hopefully, you know, better informed and more knowledgeable.
So it's really the planner's role to make sure we take care of these data gaps and biases in the algorithms. Obviously, there's also, you know, benefits from using AI and planning, processing all the data and bigger data amounts than what we used to process in planning. Neda, what are some of your thoughts on that from an engineer's perspective, someone who's working a lot with AI already? Maybe you have some stories to tell, experiences you've had so far, something that we planners can learn from.
Yeah, I think Tom covered it very well in terms of how complicated it is to model those social and political aspects and expertise. And I completely agree with that. From a more technical perspective, I would say software development traditionally could follow a sort of an agile and collaboration between different developers. So they could build pieces of it and put it together. But developing AI models is completely different and it requires a sort of an experimentation-driven approach where the whole model needs to iteratively be developed rather than individual pieces being developed and then put together. So in that sense, I think this is where a team of expertise from the social side will be very beneficial because these groups have to come together and once the model is developed, they're using significant quantities of data to eventually be able to make a robust decision. These models need to be balanced and checked for sort of risk and benefits of an AI system because of their impact to stakeholders. And that's where the human insight is very, very critical. And it also requires these groups to sort of have a general idea of how these models are being developed so they could communicate. This could be the common language between the two different disciplines, I would say, in the broad term, so that they could work together and improve these models in these iterations. So that would be my take on this.
Yeah, more and more collaboration, multidisciplinary collaboration between everyone who's involved and who, not just the developers, but as you said, also the end users of the tools and applications. We are actually also hosting a monthly group. We call it a Foresight Community on AI, where we gather computer scientists and planners. And I know Tom and Neda, you both are part of that, to discuss some of the implications. And I'm expecting a white paper to come out on some of the discussion points next year in the summer. Before we wrap up, I'd like to ask each of you, what would you recommend for planners today, knowing that a lot of this is still in development, a lot of things are already in use, but what can planners do today to learn about AI, to start preparing for it, and really to get involved in these discussions around potential applications in planning? Tom, maybe if you want to start.
Sure. There's so much information out there about AI and the development of AI, not necessarily on planning right now, but I know that APA is going to remedy that. But, there are podcasts out there, lots of podcasts on AI, a couple that I listen to, Sam Charrington, Lex Friedman. There's also the MIT Technology Review. There's several out there, which I think are really interesting to look at across kind of applications, because that also generates new ideas in your mind. If somebody's telling you what the AI applications are for planning, then is that what you go with? Or, can you be a little bit creative or do, some building on your own? So I think kind of that those broad resources are really helpful. Lots of YouTube videos on AI. LinkedIn Learning has lots of tutorials on AI, machine learning, and certainly lots to read out there, and not all of it new. We see the mention of AI for planning, actually going back to the late 60s, 70s, and 80s, with work by Michael Batty and George Chadwick, a lot of work in the UK. And the great thing about some of those old books, they're all available online for $3 or $4. And so it's amazing that we can get a hold of a lot of these old resources and really kind of see the roots of the research. And again, what they were calling artificial intelligence in a lot of cases, although there are expert systems, decision support systems, you know, and these other types. But it's about building smart planning systems.
Lots of great recommendations. Neda, anything to add?
I think Tom again covered it very well. But I also would like to touch on the importance of educating future generations. I think many programs in the nation and international are doing a great job of creating these interdisciplinary programs and degrees that is a combination of engineering, computer science, urban planning, so they could take courses from all different departments. I know at Georgia Tech we have recently started a program, Urban Analytics, which is a combination of multiple departments. So it's important to start creating that mindset in the newer generation and give them those tools and give them those perspectives so that they're already coming in ready to collaborate. And this collaboration often gets tedious and it's hard. So it's better to start from earlier in the education stages. And hopefully in the future, as the AI discipline evolves, so does the workforce.
Wonderful. And obviously, I would like to add our APA knowledge base collection on AI that we just recently published a month or two ago. So obviously, there's already a lot of resources also collected on AI and how it relates to planning. And of course, if any of you have any links that you think are helpful for our members, we can certainly share them also on the webpage where we will publish this podcast so people can get some reading material or maybe YouTube videos. So again, thank you so much, Neda and Tom, for joining me for this discussion. We could probably go on and on and on for hours. But yeah, these are really very valuable inputs for our work here on AI. And you will see more products on this topic coming out soon. And yeah, again, thank you both so much for being part of our AI community.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for a great conversation.
For more information on artificial intelligence and other future-focused topics such as digital twins and urban air mobility, check out APA Foresight at planning.org/foresight. You will find practical guidance on how to make sense of these fast-developing trends. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the American Planning Association podcast. If you're enjoying the show, why not rate and review us on iTunes? And don't forget to subscribe at Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you get your podcasts.